Okay. In 3, 2, 1. Welcome back to Ryan Reviews the Universe, bringing you the best takes for the best times for you, the best people. I'm your host, Ryan Mason Cup, and with me back again this week, Noah, our sports, soccer, basketball, the other fun stuff correspondent. We had an unreleased episode where we made a bunch of predictions regarding the 2024 Euros and the 2024 Copa Americas.
And some Pacers talk.
And it's a little bit of Pacers talk as well.
I kind of spit in the unreleased episode.
Here's the thing. We're going to review our takes that we made in the unreleased episode.
I'm glad. I think I have the record for most appearances on Ryan Reviews the Universe, and I also now hold the record for most Ryan Reviews the Universe unreleased episodes.
So there's the one with you, me, and Rooks, the Spider-Man one.
We'll never see the light of day. That episode was a night out after the bars when we saw the new Spider-Man movie, and I think it was like a 2.5 hour long podcast where we ranked every Spider-Man movie.
And then the best spiders in fiction. Charlotte made the list.
That is a Patreon exclusive.
Alright, so with the Euros, we kind of mapped out the knockout stage and who we thought, kind of created our own bracket. You went 12 for 15 as far as winners are concerned.
Pretty good.
And I went 8 for 15, so
I realistically, if I stuck to my guns, I should have gone 14 for 15.
Yeah, we'll come to that game in a second. Let's just start off by saying the best part of the the best side of the bracket, we got all those first round of 16 matches correct.
Germany, pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, pretty cut and dry, pretty chalky. Germany, Spain, France, Portugal. We all thought those were going to be winners. Then we started to differ once those quarterfinal matches kind of came up. I took Germany, you took Spain. I took Portugal, you took France. I will say I was right on, I have a quote from it. I said, quote, Ronaldo is both savior and curse. If everything is going through him and your crosses into the box aren't connecting, you're going to have a rough go of it. That's exactly what happened. They almost lost to Slovenia, and then they didn't score at all against France, and it went to penalties.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about how Portugal's potential downfall was probably going to be Roberto Martinez's hesitancy to take off Ronaldo in games where perhaps Portugal isn't playing well with Ronaldo on the pitch, just because he's such a big ego. You really don't know how a guy like Ronaldo will react to that, because, you know, you assume he takes insult to that because he believes that he's the best player fit for that position. And that, honestly, Ronaldo playing bad didn't lose Portugal that game against France. I mean, it went to penalties, and at the end of the day, João Felix is the only guy who missed a penalty.
Yeah.
And that's tough.
It is tough.
It's
apparently Ronaldo unfollowed João Felix after the game on Instagram.
That's very tough. I was actually listening to a video earlier today. It was an interview with Cole Palmer.
Oh, really?
Who has very quickly turned into one of probably the best penalty takers in the world. The interviewer asked him just what his approach was to penalties, and he straight up said he has no approach. He does not know where he shoots until he shoots it. And I thought that was really interesting, actually, because that kind of makes sense to me. If Cole Palmer doesn't even know where he's going to shoot it until he shoots it,
the goalie's going to have no chance. Either, yeah.
It provides, you know, like, the goalie with less data. The data doesn't mean as much if he knows that Cole Palmer is truly just kind of choosing it at the moment of the time. And I thought that was really interesting from someone who's emerging themselves as a very good penalty taker.
At the same time, like, does any statistics show that he has any clear preference as where he's going to kick the ball? Like, he might not be thinking, oh, I'm going to hit it high and to the left, but that's kind of what the data is showing, that he's Like, is there a heat map for his penalties?
I don't know about that, but honestly, he's just so good at placement and power and finding the right combo of that, that I think he's confident in shooting it anywhere. Sure. And people, I feel like outsiders, maybe people don't watch soccer as much, but we're watching these Euros or Copas, kind of think penalties are like a coin flip as to just, does the goalie guess the right way? But taking penalties, as in the person kicking the ball, that is very much a skill that can be trained and like honed.
If you looked at Jordan Pickford's water ball during the game against Switzerland, which we'll get to, you'll see that on it had the name of every single member of the Swiss national team and their specific preferences as far as where they like to take penalties. So there is like a decent amount of studying involved if you are a keeper in that regard.
Well, I watched a really cool video about Jorginho and Jan Sommer, the
Borussia Mönchengladbach.
He's on Inter.
Oh, when did he move to Inter?
After he was he was at Bayern. After watching, oh my god.
He used to be.
There was a really cool, Jorginho used to be one of the best penalty takers. He might have been the best penalty taker in the world at the last Euros at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he does that signature, like, hop step before he shoots it. Because that's how that's how he gets goalies to go a certain way. And then he actually decides where to shoot based on which way the goalie leans when he does that hop step. And Jan Sommer actually caught on to that. And when Jorginho would go to do his hop step, Jan Sommer would lean one way, but it's a fake out, and he would go the other way. And he actually blocked two straight Jorginho penalties that way.
Really?
And they, I forget, I think it was in another match, but Jorginho actually changed his entire approach when facing Jan Sommer, and he didn't do the hop step, and he straight up just missed because Jan Sommer got into his head that much because he figured out how his penalties worked. It was really interesting.
How, oh my gosh, he's been on Inter Milan for the past year.
Yeah, that's a terrible...
Oh.
Well, pros.
He was at Bayern in between.
Yeah, when Neuer got...
I did remember that.
Don't worry. We'll post-production edit that one out.
No. My shame must live on forever.
Oh my god.
Anyways, Germany versus Spain. You said, quote, there's a very short list in this entire tournament that of players that are in better form than Jamal Musiala and Florian Wirst.
You know,
you had that quote and then you picked Spain. How did that?
Yeah, well, I actually went against myself. And
that's fair.
At the beginning of the pod we recorded that didn't come out, I said that Spain was going to win the whole tournament. And then I went against myself and picked France to beat Spain. And I could have got 14 out of 15 right.
Yeah, you said, I'm picking France in that game because I'm not fully bought in on Spain's defense in general. And then you named Laporte, Cucurella, Carvajal, and Ramon Lenormand. You're sounding a little bit like Gary Neville there, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That being said, Carvajal and Lenormand didn't actually end up playing that game. It was Nacho and Jesus Neves because I want to say Carvajal got a red card.
Yes.
And Lenormand, I think, had to step out because too many yellows.
Yes.
So you could have been 14 for 15.
Yes. But that that Spain-Germany game was very evenly matched, and it honestly came down to just a couple of plays. And Spain somehow, you know, Spain, their last three matches, they win all three of them 2-1, and they were all very close games. Spain-Germany might have been my game of the tournament. It is kind of a disappointing run for a Germany team that is so stacked with talent to lose in the quarters, but I don't know how mad you could really be when, you know, you have to play Spain in the quarters and Spain does inevitably go on to win the tournament.
Yeah. On the other side of the draft, or not, bracket rather, we have Switzerland versus Italy. I did end up picking Switzerland, but I picked a lot of other upsets that just never rang true. I picked Romania over the Netherlands. I thought, like, I had a little bit of bias towards them.
Went against your own boys.
I know. What's going on? And then you admitted this was a coin flip, too, and it was a massive game. Austria versus Turkey.
Very much a coin flip.
Very much a coin flip. It was a phenomenal game. I did watch that one live. And you ended up taking Netherlands all the way against England. and picking England. We both picked England to make it to the final, and we both picked them to lose to whoever opponent they went against.
Yeah.
Granted, I had it England versus Germany. You had it England versus France. But honestly, if it was England versus Spain, I'm sure we would have picked England to lose that game as
yes.
well.
Yes. Is water wet, Ryan? Does a bear shit in the woods? It's like,
it
does,
is never
does England
home.
Lose finals? They do. Just speaking on that other side of the bracket, I know when we were talking about Italy, Switzerland, we were kind of debating between does a team with more talent win that game, or does a team coming into the knockouts in better form win that game?
You also did mention the fact that if you asked 10 different Italians about what their best starting lineup would be, you would get 10 different answers, which I still think is absolutely true.
I do think that's true, and we also talked about how, you know, who was going to be like Italy's like Grim Reaper, like who could finish a game for Italy, who could
picked out their left back
or put a game away, and out of, you know, they didn't really have that attacking presence Italy did, and Switzerland come to that game with a lot of confidence, and they sneak away with that win against a talented Italy team. And
yeah.
I think Italy do have, for sure, have questions to address in terms of, you know, preparing for the World Cup. It is crazy Netherlands got to the semifinals, but honestly, they never really impressed me that much, Ryan.
No.
They're a team stacked with talent, but they don't play as a, you know, as like a very fluid 11, I feel like.
Your take about your main man for them was actually Wout Weghorst, which was, he didn't score many goals in the knockout rounds, but at the same time, he's going on runs into space and drawing people away, which is maybe creating more opportunities for other people within their attack. I think they beat Romania 3-0. That wasn't exactly a close one. And then Turkey was perhaps a little bit more scary, but they got the job done. The English, let's talk about them for a hot moment. Gareth Southgate has just decided that he's going to retire today. We do not know who the new English men's national team coach will be. Your guess was Graham Potter, I want to say.
Yes.
Frank Lampard and their current under-21s coach have also been thrown
Lee
into the
ring. Lee Churdsley, I believe.
Yeah.
I have it kind of narrowed down to four people in my mind for the next English head coach.
And who are they?
So I would have Poch, I would have Thomas Tuchel, I would have Graham Potter, and I would have Lee Churdsley, I think is his name. He's the U21 coach.
You think Eddie Howe has no...
They did request to speak with Eddie Howe, but...
You could see this as a way out to save face with a rather disappointing season over at Newcastle last year.
Yes, but honestly, I think Newcastle is a good team to be coaching right now. I think it's a good... I mean, they have the money. They have the talent. They had a whole season without Tonali. And Tonali, in my mind, is a top two important piece to that team. But going into this England hire, I think it's a mix of three factors that they're taking the most. Is they want someone who plays progressive style of football, which Southgate does not. They want someone who obviously can identify and develop youth talent. And then this hire needs to have some sort of name value. Just bringing that to the team, you know, they want someone who has some sort of notoriety. And the problem with me for Poch is international football seems much more founded in like a stable defensive line, and like a foundation in defense, I think, is what international football feels more so than club football. And Poch has kind of proven at Chelsea and PSG that, you know, he can get teams that score goals, but then Chelsea couldn't defend last season to save their life, and that's inevitably leads to Poch being fired. So I don't really see Poch as a fit for this English team. I think a lot of people would say, I think, wouldn't mind Tuchel being the coach. But Tuchel, for me, is a very boom or bust decision. You know, the thing that has gotten him fired from his last three jobs hasn't been you know, his tactical style of play. He's a very good tactical coach.
I would not have fired him at Chelsea after the end of the season, honestly.
Yes, I believe at his last three jobs, he's lasted an average of a year and 8 months.
Yeah.
Tactically, he's very good, but his temperament, I think, is what turns people off. I think that's what turned Chelsea off. I think that's what turned Bayern off from letting him go. And, you know, for all the bad things we say about Southgate, he was consistent, if not anything else. He was...
Handling the English press is not a job that I would ever wish on anyone if you're the men's national team coach.
And, you know, England were, I think, winning in spite of Southgate and not, like, because of Southgate.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think his subs... Every subs he made in the Euros were the right call, but I think anyone could have made those subs. Like... Subbing in Cole Palmer and Ollie Watkins in a final where you haven't generated shit is like a no-brainer decision.
Yeah.
Cole Palmer should have been starting those last three games over Phil Foden. He should have never been coming off the bench. So I think Tuchel will certainly be an option, but the thing for Lee Churdsley, who is a guy who is the U21 coach, he knows how to develop youth, and he does play a very progressive style of football. He kind of believes in the philosophy that, like, Just because you're a left winger doesn't mean that you're only confined to the space that a left winger would normally take. So he does match the progressive style of football, and he also develops youth. But there's no name value there, so I don't know if that, like, this English hire needs to, like, satisfy fans. And I don't know if he necessarily moves the needle in that way.
I feel like the difference between the U.S. men's national team and the English one is that... I mean, they were willing to stick with Southgate for so long, even though he was a boring pick. And the English fans did, to their credit, put up with it and got some decent results. So I think it's more likely for them to choose someone within their youth system than perhaps the States, where I feel like all we want are massive names or people who are already connected to the U.S. men's soccer.
Yes. Like, and whatever. I think Lee, in a way, sort of knows that because he already is within the system, because he actually turned down a job to be the head coach of Ireland, I think sometime last year. And Ireland, in its current state, you know, they're not that exciting of a team, but Ireland have some very exciting youth prospects. So the fact that he's turning down that job, I think maybe... tips his hand that he knows something that maybe the general public doesn't know. But that does lead us to Graham Potter, who I think will be the next coach of England. Graham Potter plays progressive football. He showed that at Brighton, has shown an ability to develop youth. You know, he gets guys like Matoma, Caicedo, McAllister, lots of guys he developed at Brighton. And then I think he provides just enough name value to where English fans would be excited. And Graham Potter still has, you know, things to prove to me. After getting fired from Chelsea, you know, he's had opportunity to coach club soccer again. Leicester offered him twice to be their head coach, and he denied them twice because I think he feels himself as a top-tier manager, so he wants to coach a top-tier team, but no top-tier team is taking the risk on Graham Potter at this point because... the Chelsea stint didn't go very well, and regardless of what you think about that, I think this England team would provide him with a good opportunity to coach top-tier talent, a top team, to prove that he is a top-tier manager, which then could lead him into a bigger club opportunity. And I think he's the right fit for the job because I think like guys like Tuchel and Poch are still going to hold out for jobs that are bigger than England.
That's kind of... So, say he does end up taking the England job. We can only speculate on his motivations. But would he leave after the 26th World Cup no matter what happens, you think, in that scenario?
I could see England hiring an interim manager. They really want... England fans, they want Klopp or Pep.
And there's no way they're going to get Klopp.
Zero chance they get Klopp. Pep is not... out of the question and for a 2026 World Cup run. And I don't know...
That would cement him as probably the best manager ever, honestly. with how many Champions Leagues he's had and a World Cup. I mean, how many... Perhaps there were some old guys way back in the day, but I can't think of a modern manager that who has a World Cup trophy and a Champions League trophy.
I mean, do people have, like... is Ancelotti, like, ranked higher all-time than Pep?
I would. Right
yes.
now?
Yes.
At this moment, right now...
I don't know if one World Cup ranks Pep higher than Ancelotti, but... Ancelotti also is just printing them with Real Madrid.
This is true.
He could print another one next year with Mbappe.
He made Everton look good for a hot second.
Yeah. But I think Graham Potter will end up being the next coach of England, and I think that will be a very good move for England because what do you take of the whole Graham Potter at Chelsea stint? I think it's a weird situation all around.
Yeah, I mean...
You certainly can't place all of the blame on Graham Potter.
I loved him over at Brighton. I think that he was hampered by a situation with, I think, Todd Boehly and all of them kind of...
Breathing down his neck.
And giving him too many options to work with. Like, they had a sea of players, and all of whom are mostly promising... To have struggles in finding what your best 11 is after coming into a new gig with a lot of players you don't know that much about, I can understand having a rough go of that.
That is my one negative I do have about Graham Potter is his... He may not be the best at determining who his best 11 is. I think largely... So there was a time when he was at Brighton where he kind of refused to start... McAllister and Caicedo next to each other in the midfield. He kind of believed that they couldn't work out. And I believe injuries to Pascal Gross and Billy Gilmore in the season he was at Brighton kind of led him to force himself to play Caicedo and McAllister together. And the rest is kind of history. Like yeah. McAllister and Caicedo turned out to be a great pairing next to each other. And they both get sold for mega bucks. So that is my one like hindrance I do have about Graham. But the English 11 in my mind kind of is like, it's kind of... It sorts itself out, you know. Like, you do have a couple questions, like who your 10 is, like who would you start at CAM right now. They were largely starting Jude, but I honestly think the midfield, I think Jude should be playing more of an 8 next to Declan. I think the 10, if I was going into this last Euros, would have been Phil Foden certainly deserved to start a couple of the group games. At the moment, he wasn't returning anything. You had to start Cole Palmer.
At this point in time, do you think that Harry Kane will end up starting for England in 26?
Yes. Okay. He's got a legacy.
Well, okay, I hate this legacy topic because in the World Cup, in the Euros, you should not be... This isn't like the Olympics. This is the biggest international trophies. You have to pick who your actual best guys in at that moment instead of just letting guys who are big at one point in time try to get their trophies. I don't know.
That's not how it works.
That's stupid.
And I mean, the options behind him are Ollie Watkins and Tony.
Well, a lot can change in 2 years, though.
Yes, Ollie Watkins could.
That's what I'm saying. View into the future.
But also, Kane is going to put up. The stats are going to be there for Kane in his favor because he's playing for a team like Bayern.
He's playing for a team like Bayern. Let's talk about the actual winners, Spain. Yamin Yamal, probably my player of the tournament. Oh my gosh, that's a Yamin Yamal, Jamal Musiala mix-up. Yikes! They were a wonderful team. Congrats to Alvaro Morata, honestly. I thought he played really well despite not getting any goals. Just constant runs into the box to kind of free up space for those other Spanish attackers. Gary Neville proved wrong, I guess?
Yes, a lot of the Spain players had very nice things to say about Morata. More so just about his... He is Spain's captain.
Yeah.
And how he is a very good captain and a very good presence in the locker room. Mm-hmm. They don't really have a better striker option to put in at the moment. Like, whenever Morata would get subbed out, they're putting in Kel Oyarzabal, mm-hmm. Who's not really a striker. But yeah, Lamine Yamal and Nico Williams were both...
Danny Olmo?
Yeah, Danny Olmo also had a very good...
He has my moment of the tournament where he headed the ball out of what would have been a confirmed goal after Oh, geez, whose shot was it?
Declan Rice header blocked by Unai Simon. Yep. Mark Gahey header blocked off the line by
Daniel. That was a phenomenal header, too.
Yes, it was. That was a crazy header. Moment. But yeah, Dani Olmo, Nico Williams, Lamine Yamal. If I'm Barcelona, I'm spending as much as I possibly can to get Nico Williams, and you have your wingers for the next 10 years for Barcelona.
Wait, I thought that Chelsea got him.
No, Chelsea do want him, but also fuck Chelsea.
Yeah.
Snipe my coach over the summer.
I hope that.
Snipe my favorite midfielder over the summer.
I hope that.
I hope everything bad happens to Chelsea. Gosh. I hope Simon Barnhill never sees another successful Chelsea season in his lifetime.
He'll have that 1-4-3 win at Stamford Bridge, though.
And Enzo Maresca is such a good coach, and he runs a very good modern system. He's a Pep disciple, and Chelsea inevitably are probably going to be good. But I don't know if you saw the Chelsea news today, Ryan.
What happened?
But after Argentina won the Copas on Sunday, there were videos coming from the Argentina locker room of them doing some sort of chant about France, where they were saying... This is not a quote, but they were talking about how, like, your mother's from Nigeria, your father's from somewhere, geez. But your passport's French. Very racist stuff.
Wow.
And today, I think Axel De Sassi, Wesley Fofana, Malo Gusto, and maybe Noni Madueke all unfollowed Enzo Fernandez off Instagram, and Wesley Fofana even posted... something on his Instagram story today saying in 2024, football in 2024, inhibited racism is what he posted on his Instagram story about his teammate Enzo Fernandez, which is not great.
No.
Not great. So I don't know if this will really blow into something bigger. You know, worst case nuclear scenario, this leads to Chelsea having to sell Enzo Fernandez because... his teammates don't want to play with a racist guy, which would be bad.
That does not make the Argentinian squad look very good at all.
No.
Let's just quickly congratulate Spain before we move on to the Copas. Your predictions included Brazil and Argentina as your Tier 1 teams, and then the USA and Colombia as your Tier 2 teams.
Yeah, I somehow just completely forgot about Uruguay.
You did completely forget about Uruguay. But at that exact moment that we were recording the podcast, it was the beginning
of... We were up 1-0 against Panama.
We were up 1-0 against Panama. We were feeling good. I said, quote, "We are finally getting the hope that is usually only reserved for a women's team. Lots of things to be excited for if you're a U.S. men's national team guy." And that Panama game, it didn't turn out that well, did it?
No. So we go up 1-0 early. Panama ties the game 1-1. Timothy Weah gets a red card. Panama go on to win the game 2-1. Inevitably, basically knocking us out of the knockout stages.
Yep.
Because next game then, we need a win against Uruguay and also Guatemala to beat Panama. Bolivia to beat Panama.
Yeah.
And Panama beat Bolivia. We lose to Uruguay, making it so we do not make the knockout stages, leading to the inevitable firing of Greg Berhalter. Some say Timothy Weah did the U.S. a favor in getting rid of Berhalter before the World Cup. It's embarrassing to not make the knockout stages of that tournament.
Yeah.
In a tournament where I was feeling the U.S. team, I thought we were really good with Timothy Weah in our starting lineup. And it's interesting because now we are also looking for a coach. We immediately reach out to Jurgen Klopp. He immediately says, fuck no.
Let's just leave you on red forever.
He immediately says, hell no. And now we're looking for a coach. I think inevitably we'll end up hiring the LAFC coach, Steve Trenudo, I think is his name. And just another MLS guy. Who knows how that will work out. Copa, going from the Euros and watching those games to going to watching Copa games is just disgusting.
For those who don't know much about soccer, maybe you have heard about certain corruption within FIFA, but it's really prevalent in a lot of the different confederations. CONMEBOL ran this tournament in the US, and there was almost like a wave crush at the finals match between Argentina and Colombia. People were getting into the stadium without having tickets, and honestly, bad things have happened. Was it the Hillsborough incident? The disaster that happened in Liverpool?
No? I
don't know what that is. So, like, sometimes, like, fans will just break through the stands and... Not stands. The, like, gates.
Stanchions.
Yes. And kind of, like, there will be crushes of too many people trying to get into the stands at the same time.
Yeah, Fab literally posted a video of, like, Colombian fans, like, sneaking through the air vents of the stadium.
Yeah, crazy.
Which does not prove well for stadium infrastructure for the 2026 World Cup.
No.
The pitches are so shit. Like, the quality of the fields are shit. Copa is just so hard to watch when they're fouling each other every fucking 5 seconds. A team like Colombia, who, granted, they played well. They got to the final of the Copas, but... they couldn't go 10 seconds without fouling someone. And it just makes... It's like when people say they don't like soccer and then you try to show them a Copa final between Argentina and Colombia and every 15 seconds there's a stoppage of play. It's just so annoying.
Yeah.
But Angel Di Maria does win his last international game ever. I think that was a really cool moment for Argentina. You can see how much it meant to him.
Jaime Rodriguez... kind of having a little bit of a rebirth.
Had a great tournament.
I'm really happy for him. My guy, Yasser Asprilla from Watford, who plays for Colombia, he did pretty well. Who else?
Ismail Kone misses a penalty in the third place game.
Also kicks a guy on Uruguay while he's flopping.
And he's on his way to France.
He's on his way to France.
But don't worry, they got his replacement in Moussa Sissoko.
Oh, jeez. It'll be interesting. Moussa Sissoko on Watford. We'll talk about transfers in a moment. Is there anything else you want to say about the Copas? Or about the U.S. men's national team and what we think our future is?
I just don't even know about the future of the U.S. men's national team. Like, we're just a little soft. We gotta, you know, especially going into a tournament like Copa where you know the games are going to be physical, like... we have to be ready for that, and it feels like teams could so easily get into our heads and kind of change the mentality of our players. And hopefully, that could be fixed by a new coach coming in and changing the mindset of a team. We certainly have the talent to, win a knockout game. Maybe win two.
Yeah. We definitely should have made it to the semis there. But what you going to do? What are you going to do? You mentioned that you were... Actually, no. Let's go back to Watford really quick. We are never going to go back to the Prem. That's not entirely true, but I think it will be around a decade or so before that eventually happens. Kone is really good. We sold him. Sissoko is back on the squad. I don't see that moving the dial much at all. Tom Cleverley, of all people, is our head coach. I like Tom Cleverley. I think maybe he might be a good manager, but it is kind of disheartening. I don't think anyone wants to take the Watford job because the Pazos just love to fire people after they meet them in the first 5 seconds. Anyways, you mentioned that you were putting together as kind of like, where are they now?
Yes. So, we can do a little game called Who Do I Play For?
Who do I play for?
These are players that have gotten a move over this summer. I used to do this game with Colin on Bench Chatter where I would name obscure NBA bench players and I would see if Colin could guess what team they were on now.
Bench players? I'm not going to be able to do bench. If you're pulling up a bench Bologna,
That's why I kind of had to change it because I know you don't know ball. I mean, you mixed up Lamine Yamal and Jamal Musiala, for Christ's sake. I'm trying to get this list to load, but, you know, this internet's not having its time right now. We can start with someone. Now I'm worried. I don't want to roast you on your own pod.
I've already been roasted. It's all good.
Yeah, let's see. Let's go Joshua Zirkzee, striker for Bologna last season. Just got a big-time move to an English club.
He is now at Man United.
Good job.
There we go. Let's go.
I don't know. We can test your championship ball knowledge.
Oh, what about... let's talk about Jaime Rodriguez. Where is he right now?
I don't know.
He's on São Paulo.
Okay. Yeah,
he's in Brazil.
Let's keep it Brazilian. Philip Coutinho gets a move from Aston Villa to where?
Oh, geez. Marseille?
No.
No?
He went back to Brazil.
Flamengo.
No. I think they're a black and white team.
Botafogo?
No. I think they start with a V. I think it's Vasco.
Oh, Vasco da Gama?
Yes. Okay. That is where Philip Coutinho is at now. This list won't load, so I'll just try to name some off the top. Ooh, where did Michy Batshuayi go? He goes Turkey to Turkey. He stays in Turkey.
So he was at Galatasaray.
Yes. And he made a somewhat controversial move to another team in Turkey.
That means that he's either at Fenerbahce or Besiktas.
He went to Fenerbahce.
Okay, let's go.
And the Galatasaray fans are not going to like that.
Oh, jeez.
Let's go Newcastle winger, Alan Saint-Maximini. He goes from Newcastle to where?
I really do not know this. I'll guess, how much did they sell him for?
It's a loan.
Is he staying in England?
No. He went to Turkey.
He's going to Galatasaray then?
No.
He's really?
Teaming up with Michy Batshuayi at
Fenerbahce. Really?
Spicy move.
Wow, actually, that's the Turkish league has actually become kind of fun. Last year with
only there was like Zaha. Any way to watch their games outside of international or outside of like European Cup competitions. It's pretty hard to watch their games.
That's true. But I used to watch them all the time at my old work because they somehow had the Turkish games on in BN or whatever, and they had that channel at Upland. But last year they had Mauro Icardi, Zaha, and Batshuayi as kind of their front three attacking group. And that was really, really fun. So seeing more stars go out to Turkey, that's a fun league.
Let's go longtime legendary striker for Lazio, Ciro Immobile.
He's in the States right now. He is... No?
No.
Immobile is no longer in the States. I could have sworn he was...
Like you thought MLS?
I thought he was in the MLS, yeah.
No, he made a move from Lazio to another European country. Maybe Turkey again.
Really? Immobile is now at Trabzonspor. I don't know.
He's at Besiktas now.
Okay.
Let's go Tottenham record signing... Tanguy Ndombele goes from Tottenham to where?
Marseille.
No, but he did go to France.
No, PSG then.
Nice.
Okay.
Goes back to his roots.
Man, I'm doing terrible.
That's fine. I mean, I just have Fab's tweet notifications on, so I see these all the time.
I only follow the transfer markets. Stuff, so I get a little bit of that, and then it's like the Guardian Football Weekly and some other stuff from Athletic. So that's where I'm getting all my information and like notifications on FootMob, I guess.
Yeah, it's honestly been kind of a slow transfer window so far. Kind of expected to pick up now that the international competitions are over. Trying to think of just some exciting potential transfers that we could be seeing soon. You know, Romelu Lukaku comes out today and says he's very open to a reunion with Conte at Napoli now. Antonio Conte at Napoli is a pretty weird sentence to say in itself. But that's all contingent on Napoli being open to selling Victor Osimhen.
You already mentioned this. You already mentioned this, but the Nico Williams from, Basque Club. Atletico Bilbao. I hope they get a boatload from either Chelsea or Barcelona. I'm trying to think.
I think Liverpool's another sleeper cup for a team like for a player like Nico Williams to go to.
Yeah.
They would obviously have to sell Luis Diaz first, which Barcelona are also rumored to be interested in, but for Barcelona it makes no interest to get Luis Diaz, especially after watching Nico Williams and what he just did in the Euros. A guy like Lenny Euro, a very exciting 18-year-old center-back prospect, I think coming from Nice or Lyon. Real Madrid very badly want him. He's probably next up in terms of the young center-backs. Could see a Dani Olmo going to a team like Man City. When Man City wants someone, they usually get them, so I could see that transfer going through.
Yeah.
Still kind of waiting for Liverpool to sign another center-back. You know, Konate's kind of proven that he has a pretty bad track record of staying healthy. Gerald Kwanzaa had a really good season, but I don't know if he's starting caliber center back, especially for the aspirations that Liverpool have. What else? Mbappe to Real Madrid's happening. Classic. They're going to be very good. Yeah. I don't know what else. Leicester haven't really been that active in the transfer market far.
Really.
We signed Michael Golding from Chelsea for $5 million for someone who's probably worth like $400K, so not great business. Wilfred Ndidi re-signed with us, which is kind of a dub, but honestly, Enzo Maresca was getting a lot out of him as an 8, so I'm not that impressed with it.
Donny van de Beek
moved to Girona for like $500K, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, with a possible $4 million in add-ons.
What a fall from grace.
I think this could be a good spot for him if...
We're just like 3 years past Donny van de Beek being a...
He's 27 years old. He is definitely at the lowest point in his career. Girona still... are going to be playing European football next year. Just
I don't think Dovbik's getting a move. I think he's staying.
Okay, yeah. Let's preface this by saying that at the beginning of the year, I made a bet in the soccer group chat wherein I had to make 5 soccer predictions right before I made 5 wrong. Right now, I'm sitting at 3-1 with 1 prediction on the line. That is a Dovbik...
1-3.
Yes, as in 3 till I have to shave my head and... 1 correct.
You have 2 till you have to shave. You have 3 wrong.
Correct.
You're 2 away from shaving your head with Dovbik pending that you said he would get a move to a bigger club.
Correct. So I'm just going to have to lock it in on a bunch of Chelsea wins after October because I have a wedding that I have to go to and the bride has told me that she will unalive me if I am bald at the wedding.
You might need to get a move to Fenerbahce.
I might need to get a move to Fenerbahce. Catch me at Besticos, baby.
But speaking of Ajax Wonder Kids, I think Matthijs de Ligt may get a move to Man United. Bayern are very open to selling him. I think that would be a good move for Matthijs de Ligt, teaming back up with Erik ten Hag.
Before we end the pod... I think we're pretty wrapped up on soccer stuff, but you saw a movie pretty recently. It is the new kind of horror thriller film, perhaps the spiritual successor to Silence of the Lambs. The film features an FBI agent who is tasked with uncovering some serial killer mystery that has to do with like paranormal, like the
satanic
occult,
satanic vibes.
Yeah,
it's called Long Legs. Nick Cage plays the serial killer in the movie. Very good.
Okay.
Really good movie. It's more so a psychological thriller / horror film rather than your traditional jump scare horror, I would say, in my mind. Which is the kind of horror movie I'm looking to watch, really. I like shit that, like, realistically... The shit that really scares me is like the type of shit that could just happen in real life. And this is very much so something like that, as opposed to just jump scares, like cheap horror thrills. Probably the second best movie I've seen in 2024, right next to Dune 2. We've kind of been lacking in watching new movies as they've been coming out. I want to see Civil War, the new the 824 movie.
Civil War is good.
I need to see Furiosa because I loved Mad Max Fury Road. And that movie just kind of got reviewed bombed because people hate women. But yeah, I think Dune 2 is a 6 out of 7. I also think Long Legs is a 6 out of 7. Some people with Long Legs may feel... I think their biggest qualm would probably be that the ending feels a little, like, rushed or just abrupt. But honestly, how are you really supposed to end a horror movie, you know, that is not going to have a sequel to it?
Like, yeah.
It's kind of hard to end a horror movie in a way like that, so I don't really have that kind of qualm with that. But Nicolas Cage puts on a really good performance. The main actress's name is escaping me, but she also was fantastic. It's just a really good take on the horror genre. And this is coming from someone who really doesn't... I really don't like watching horror movies that much because I just don't like being scared.
I'm right there with you.
I'm trying to think where I would rank it in terms of my top horror movies.
I'm just going to quickly say that I haven't watched this film yet. I have watched Dune 2. I agree with your take that it's a 6. I particularly enjoyed the fact that in Dune 2 they changed some things from the book to make it obvious that Paul Atreides is not the hero.
Yes.
Because unfortunately audiences kind of have to be beat over the head when... Like, you should not be following fascist religious zealots to the end of the earth. And Chani, who's Zendaya's character, kind of stands up to him a little bit, and I thought... That was a good change.
Whereas in the book, she kind of like goes along with
it. In the book, she goes along with it. So I think that director's choice was the right move.
Austin Butler was awesome.
No, I disagree. I thought he was still playing Elvis Presley. He was like,
Jesus Christ.
Hey, little mama, I'm going to take the spice.
I think the scenes when they were on Planet Harkonnen so cool, where it's all black and white, and like they had a scene where fireworks were going off. It looked, the film visually is a 7 out of 7.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you why it's not a 7 out of 7.
I agree.
But
it's a 6.
You know,
a 6 is a great score.
I hold 7 out of 7s for, and you know, those are for high regarded movies.
When was the last time I gave out a 7? Probably Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I gave the last Spider-Verse a 7 out of 7.
I think I gave it a 6 because the third movie will retroactively determine whether that's a 7. It leaves so much off on a cliffhanger. The payout has to be good in order for that movie to be truly good.
Yeah, visually those movies just tip the bar for me.
Absolutely.
Their animation is next to none.
Yep.
It's like the best animation as it gets so far that we've seen ever, maybe.
Cannot argue with that.
Yeah, Everything Everywhere All at Once is a top 5 movie of all time for me. Mm-hmm. So,
trying to think anything else. Noah, thank you for coming back. This one actually will be released.
Yeah, let's hope this one actually gets released. So, me, Bob, that one guy in Japan, your two family members over in Europe, that one guy in Phoenix, and that one person in Ohio can listen to this episode.
There's also one other person in...
Kansas. The guy in Kansas.
No, there's the West Virginia person.
Oh, yeah. How did we forget about your listener from West Virginia? So, yeah, big shout-out to anyone who listens
big
to...
Big shout-out to the Japanese and...
The Ryan Reviews podcast.
Peace out, guys. We'll see you next week.